The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors. Support for the Economic Club of Indiana is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025, focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today's presentation is from Sue Elsperman, president of Ivy Tech Community College.
Last year, Ivy Tech Community College of Indiana served nearly 200,000 students on 31 campuses, in 75 additional classroom locations, and over 1,000 online courses. No matter where you are in the state of Indiana, you are never very far from an Ivy Tech campus. It's an incredible network of accessibility, and it's what makes Ivy Tech the state's largest public post-secondary institution and the nation's largest statewide community college system. Ivy Tech was founded in 1963 as the Indiana Vocational Technical College with a focus on technical and vocational education. Moving from that base, today Ivy Tech offers more than 150 programs in divisions of health, technology, business and public services, and university and transfer. Over 97% of Ivy Tech's graduates remain in Indiana, so it obviously is very focused on the needs of the local community and local businesses. And the community needs focus has been expanded as work continues to change to continue to keep track and pace and prepare rising generations of Hoosiers for the opportunities of the future. As president of Ivy Tech, today's speaker, Dr. Sue Elsperman, is leading this effort to assure that the college is aligning with both workforce and community needs. Dr. Elsperman has more than 30 years of experience in higher education, economic and workforce development, and public service. From 2006 through 2012, she served as the founding director of the Center of Applied Research and Economic Development at the University of Southern Indiana. More recently, Dr. Elsperman has served as a member of the Indiana General Assembly, and then most recently, as Lieutenant Governor of Indiana, where she worked daily to align Indiana's education and workforce development system to meet the needs of employers. Dr. Elsperman holds a PhD and an MS from the University of Louisville in Industrial Engineering and a Bachelor's of Science from Purdue University, also in Industrial Engineering. She's highly engaged in the community and was recently named to the One America Board of Directors, so once again, we've got wonderful synergy here at our President's Table. And I want to just take one additional moment of personal privilege, but I want to get to Dr. Elsperman's remarks. I have worked with Sue for more than 4 years now. Have been privileged to do that. First in her role as Lieutenant Governor, where I saw her champion diverse priorities, including Indiana's ag biosciences community and economy, the Career Council, STEM education, and now in the vital role she's beginning to play, and you're going to hear a lot more about today. This is a world beater. This is a real leader, and this is someone who is absolutely the right person in this critically important job at this time. And it's the job has never been more important as we see not only education change, but work change. And understanding how to get both students in from school into the workforce, and also what to do with people who are already in the workforce who realize that they are no longer equipped to continue to participate in it. Those are all issues that I know from speaking with her already that Dr. Sue Elsperman is actively engaged with every day. She has a program and a presentation today I think will give you some further insight into that. You're going to have a lot of questions, and we'll get to as many of them at the end of this as we can. But we are really privileged to have Dr. Sue Elsperman here as our speaker today.
Thank you, David. And it is a true pleasure to be with all of you. I know a lot of faces in the House, and your commitment to this community and our state are so important. And it's a really opportunity to talk with you as both civically and economically engaged leaders as I come here. There are a few hotter topics that you have in the workforce today than this single topic called workforce. And Ivy Tech is possibly, as David alluded to, the most important post-secondary institution in the state to meet this workforce need. you've all heard about, and most of you are experiencing, raise your hand if you're experiencing the challenge in your own organization of recruiting good middle skills labor. Raise your hands. As I know there's more than a few out there, most of which are high wage, including careers in IT, nursing, industrial technology, robotics, welding, many, many opportunities. So I served as the vice chair of the Indiana Career Council, where we spent 3 years studying and then developing a strategic plan for Indiana, creating a K through 16 pipeline to those high wage, high demand jobs that we saw coming and growing in Indiana. The most stark finding was that while Indiana's jobs were returning post-recession, we would not be able to continue to grow without recognizing that large chasm between the workforce that we have versus the workforce that we need. And even before the end of the Great Recession, employers were struggling to find those middle-skill workers. I know that as Lieutenant Governor, I traveled all 92 counties. As our manufacturing economy has steadily moved towards advanced manufacturing and advanced industries across all, we're using higher levels of automation and robotics. We saw an ever-increasing need for things like industrial maintenance, robotics technicians, and more sophistication at all levels in our skilled trades. During the same time, IT has just exploded across central Indiana, having Indianapolis become one of the fastest-growing technology cities in the nation, and it's continuing to explode, particularly as we think about the Internet of Things and how that will affect all industries and all sectors. The Lumina Foundation, thank you, Jamie, for being here, headquartered here in Indy, is viewed as one of the most respected voices and funders of higher education reform. They did considerable research and found that 2/3 of new jobs in this decade would require skills beyond high school. And the recommendation that the states, all states, adopt the goal of 60% of their workforce, those ages 24 to 65, having a meaningful post-secondary degree or credential by 2025. And in fact, the Indiana Career Council adopted that goal. So thank you, Lumina. Where are we today? Here in Indiana, we sit at 41%. That's a significant gap, almost 20%. Or, thought another way, 1 million jobs that will require 1 million additional degrees and credentials going to be required over this next 10 years. And many indications are that nearly half of those will be in that sub-baccalaureate space. Jobs like cybersecurity, coders, CDL, truck drivers, many more. These degrees and certificates, what I call the sub-baccalaureate space, is really the space that we, Ivy Tech, own, for which our students already earn almost 20,000 credentials per year, which is good, but we need to increase to 50,000 per year if we're going to help Indiana meet that goal, that big goal, and most importantly, help meet the workforce needs of our Indiana employers. However, before sharing how Ivy Tech will help Indiana meet this challenge, let me paint a little picture of what Ivy Tech is, who Ivy Tech really is. Recall it was less than 10 years ago that the idea of a statewide community college, not just Votech College, but a community college, took hold, and well past time that Indiana would have that system of community colleges serving an ever-increasing number and a higher percentage of students entering higher education. Beyond workforce-directed degrees, we became a true community college where students could complete their first 2 years towards a 4-year degree affordably. Today, Ivy Tech charges just $135 a credit hour. Think of that. Many of us were paying that 35 years ago when we were going to college, but $135 a credit hour, or just about $4,000 a year, compared to 4-year partners that would begin about $7,000 and going upwards to, $25,000 if you're on a residential campus, or much more in some of our great private institutions. Today, more than 1/3 of our students started Ivy Tech and come to us with the intention of transferring to a 4-year institution, while still 60% will gain a degree or credential that will allow them to go into the workforce. And then note on that, there's this 8% guest That number has continued to grow. We have over 10,000 students a year who will just come to us to augment their education at their four-year institution. Most of those in the summer. Funny story, the summer as I was coming in, every student I met at Ivy Tech, I would introduce myself. Hi, I'm your new president. And they would always say, oh, I go to Ball State. Oh, I go to Butler. Oh, I go to... So I never got to meet our own students. They were always guest students. But our guest student policy, that ability to take that additional class in the summer or to augment the program that they have at their own four-year institution is helping many, many more students graduate on time, and that's a very good thing. Over the last 10 years, Ivy Tech has stretched in its offering of transfer programs, including things like, and so proud of Indiana for our core transfer library, which has more than 100 courses. And that includes an aligned syllabi and course objectives developed with CHE and our four-year partners so students can be assured that their classes will transfer. Today, those four-year partners recognize Ivy Tech students have, in fact, had the same learning outcomes that they would have on their own campus. And, in fact, their performance is as strong. In fact, I was just having that conversation with IUPUI's Kelly School of Business with that comment that our students are performing very well on their campuses. We've developed the TGEC, that is the General Ed Core courses, the first 30 hours that will now in Indiana transfer to any state school. TSAPs, which are the first 2 years of that four-year degree, specialized degree, and 2+2 agreements with many of our four-year partners, which help ensure our students can persist when they transfer. And I'm glad to see the superintendent of public instruction here. We are the largest provider of dual credit. 56,000 students will receive dual credit from Ivy Tech this year or this past year for over a $45 million value, even at $135 a credit hour. For many, that will make a big difference in how they can afford college. And in fact, if offered intentionally by their high school, and taken intentionally by the students, it can easily exceed their first year of college for free. I know we have Chancellor Katie Mote in the house, and in her areas in Madison and Lawrenceburg and Columbus, we have many students completing high school with a TGEC, that first 30 hours. And more than half of our dual credit is still career technical education, in which case, again, if intentional, that student can earn a one-year technical certificate or a credential that would qualify them for a high-demand, high-wage job. So from 2007 to 2011, Ivy Tech's enrollment, you can see how it went from about 98,000 students to nearly 150,000 students at the peak of the recession. Since that time, our enrollments have gradually reduced. That good labor market is back and attracting our students back. We're still higher than 2007, but not where we need to be in order to meet workforce demands and to meet the big goal, that 60% big goal by 2025. And over time, our footprint has grown to 32 campuses where students can earn a full degree. In addition, as you heard David say, we have many learning sites across the state, places where we offer some courses to meet community and employer needs and to help students begin their educational journey. And it's fair to say that most Hoosiers can, in fact, attend an Ivy Tech close to their home, within 30 miles of home. And if we were to include on that map Vincennes University, our sister institution, you would fill in a few more gaps in that southern Indiana toe region, which you would say Indiana should be proud of this higher education institution that we've built to serve. So with that as a backdrop, I'm going to quiz you now. Got a couple questions for you. Let's see how much you really know about Ivy Tech. First question, what do you think the average age of an Ivy Tech student is? A, B, C, or D? Anyone want to guess? Throw out a number. C, you think it's 29. Let's go see the real answer here. Ah, 27, you're close. We're getting a little bit younger, is more going back sooner, so that's a good thing. Okay, next question. What do you think an associate's degree earns? What do you think? C said 37,000. Let's see what the real answer is. 41,000. So I show that to say that really we are a lifeline into the middle class. We are a gateway into the middle class for many people. The third question, your final question. Which program do we graduate the most students? Anybody offer? B. You're right. See, this group's gotten better every time. Good. Those registered nurses. Look at that number. Over 1,700 registered and licensed practical nurses coming out of Ivy Tech alone. That's the good news. The bad news is that's not nearly enough. I've got healthcare folks in the room. They'll nod. But that's an amazing number. And so those are our students. I've told you we're older than traditional students. But I also, as I came in new, I wanted to find out about our students. So I have been teaching the IVYT class. That's at one credit hour course you take when you go to college. Everyone has to take it. It's a student success course. And so I've traveled to 12 campuses last semester to this one just to meet our students, to see those freshman students come in and what do they look like? What are their questions? How are they doing? So I asked the students, how many have a job? Nearly all their hands go up. Statistically, 67% of our students work, and most of them work over 30 hours. I asked them next, how many of you have children? Over half the hands will go up. This is not the classroom I sat in 35 years ago at Purdue University, and it's not even the classroom that I was in at the University of Southern Indiana where I served. In fact, 64% of our students are Pell eligible. That means that they are financial aid eligible. Think about our incomes of our students. That's 22% higher than a traditional community college, a very different population for us. So it should be no surprise to you that 69% of our students are part-time. That's a big difference. Now, you know what we're judged on? Our full-time, first-time students, which is exactly not the student that we have on a day-to-day basis. And it's far more important that we figure out how to serve that 69% very, very well and help them complete in their expected time frame because they have families, they have all the commitments that make life difficult. And oh, by the way, it's pretty hard to get those students to complete when one of you will offer them, based on a credential short-term certificate they've gotten, and you offer them a $60,000 job to go to work today, right? So lots of things, lots of challenges, but that's still success. That's still a good thing, and we want to continue to help our students succeed. In the IVYT class, I challenge students to knit together their career dreams with workforce demand. We actually dig into Department of Workforce Development's occupational data, and they have to look at their career choice and see if there's actually demand out there for it. Is it increasing or decreasing? Is it a livable wage? And if some of the answers aren't good, what are they going to reconsider? What will be their choice? And that, and so in that, they have to write a two-page paper for me at the end, and they have to describe what will they do? What is their career? Why? Is there demand? Is it a livable wage? What will their challenges be? And most importantly, the last piece is, what will success look like? I don't assume it will be money. It may be. But what will success look like when they hit the phase of their career that I'm in now, the legacy phase? So I taught my first IVYT class in Sellersburg. So I want to share a story. I asked the students to share, what are you pursuing? And one of the students, Tracy, raised her hand and she said she wanted to be an addiction counselor. And she went on to share with us that she had been a drug addict most of her life. Her mom had gotten her hooked on drugs as a teenager. She managed to hold down a job and raise a family, and then she got clean a few years ago. Her husband was not so lucky. He remained an addict, even flatlining, a little over a year ago, which is when she decided it was time for her to come back. She wanted to be an addictions counselor. I read the first paper she wrote at her in her English 111 class, and it was beautifully written, researched, talking about addiction services, what worked and why they didn't work, and her goal now is to own her own addiction recovery services chain. She has begun to share her story and the need for better addiction services, not only on her Sellersburg campus, but throughout the community. She recently notified me of the difficulties her husband is having with his addiction and the impact on their lives. Now, most students at that point would quit. She's not. It's made her more motivated than ever to stay in school and help others win their battle with addiction. And that's our story of our students. It's tragedy and hope. Many of our students have these stories: laid off workers going back to school, a mother who comes back at the same time with her son. I had them both in class with me at the same time. A single dad working full time, studying full time, and caring for his daughter. And all of these are students I've met in the past year. And let's add to that that many of our students come unprepared academically to get through their Gateway English and math courses. These students are what motivates us at Ivy Tech to get it right for our students, for our employers, and for our communities. You see, our students will remain in Indiana, as you heard David say, and typically they'll stay in the community in which they reside today. They're not likely to become part of the brain drain we read so much about. And as someone who's concerned about rural communities as I am, I'm convinced it will be our Ivy Tech students who will most likely be the future leaders in our smaller towns. So what are we doing to get right? Let me share a few of those things. Things like co-requisites. There's nothing worse than having to take a whole year of prerequisites before you can take a real course in your major. So these gateway courses, we add a lab section to them so they can get the kind of tutoring that they need. This has more than doubled pass rates as a result of those co-reqs. Math pathways to make sure that students get in the right kind of math for their degree or credential. Math, as you know, especially if you're a returning student, is such a hurdle. You know, I'm an engineer with several years of calculus, and I probably couldn't pass a Algebra 2 exam right now after this many years out, right? And I won't make you raise your hands, but I know there's many of you out there, right? And yet, that's what our students face. And we offer all students for free tutor.com, which they can do online and get tutoring help anytime, day or night. And we provide mentors to our most at-risk students using Inside Track, a weekly call that they get with coaching. And then let me talk about Project Early Success. It was an intervention we began this year as we had a new data warehouse that we could pull in our student data. We could tell using artificial intelligence, we could predict with over 80% accuracy within 2 weeks of the beginning of the semester whether a student was likely to succeed or fail. Wow. No grades, just data about their behaviors. So we said we have to take action on that. 16,000 students were at risk last fall. We made 25,000 calls across all of our campuses. In the end, we were able to raise the midterm pass rate by 3.3%, the biggest bump we've ever seen in the last 10 years. And that data warehouse, Newt, as we call it, the new thing, Newt, was built by scratch by our IT team. And it won the Gartner Award as the best self-service application for not only higher education, but all industries worldwide. And so, we use each of our 14 regions and 32 campuses as hotbeds of innovation on their own to roll out new advising practices, wraparound services, which are all more important, and many other strategies that will help our students who are often just one life event away from dropping out. It can be a broken down car, it can be sick child, job demands, debt, all those things that get in the way that would cause them to drop out. Our challenge is to figure out how to help these students succeed at rates similar to or better than traditional college students. That is our student success mission. But we have another mission. The other mission is equally as important and more urgent than ever. It is workforce alignment, and the General Assembly could not have been clearer as they passed Senate Enrolled Act 301. Now, I think my legislators are in session, so I maybe can say this off the record. No, it's not off the record. But it was the Ivy Tech bill last year, and it really made us look seriously at how aligned we are. It required that the Ivy Tech president hire a chief workforce officer, just like we have a chief academic officer, usually called the provost, and we have. He is Chris Lowry with a stellar career with Hillenbrand. He served on his school board and was a school board president in Batesville. He was chancellor of two of our Ivy Tech campuses, and he chaired the Region 9 Works Council. So perfect. Now that he's in his sixth month there, he's doing great things. And we've aligned our organization with the Indiana Career Council recommendations by industry sectors. So we have a VP for manufacturing, for health professions, information technology, supply chain and logistics, and we're working with Purdue and Vincennes to hire together a VP of agriculture. So that Agrinovis activity, David, that we've been working on, we know that the demand in agriculture is ever growing. It's certainly a backbone of our state, but growing as well. All focused on alignment. And each of these individuals, these VPs, are 100% industry facing, and they work with our deans and our chairs to ensure our programs align with industry needs. However, having the right programs is only half the challenge. The second is ensuring that we're delivering the right numbers of graduates and completions to meet the demand. So Department of Workforce Development, DWD as we lovingly call them, in that same bill were required to give us data on that demand. And we took that seriously and we worked with them to crosswalk their data to our degrees and credentials to illustrate how well aligned are we really. You're going to see this next slide is the tool that we developed, which allows us to see how close we are in meeting that demand. So here you're seeing registered nurses, and we can look at this by all sectors, but now you see registered nurses only now as we pull out. This is a screenshot that shows you just what that demand is. You can see the green means we're doing well, we're producing enough in that region, but look at central Indiana. We're way off, 450 nurses, registered nurses off, and you can see the demand just. And that's a very conservative number. I think if I polled those in healthcare, you would say that number's probably bigger. But in the middle, you can see where all of our campuses are, and we share exactly how many graduates we've had. Now, on the next slide, you're going to see machinists. That'll get some of your attention. Look at the red, all red. We're not completing very many machinists right now. A lot of unmet demand, and that's what this visualization tool. It will help us identify which programs we need to expand in each region. And that means also not just offer them, but to recruit into those programs. I'm sure we would take more machinists if they walked in our door, students who wanted that, but they don't even know that's a career that they should be pursuing. So we have to learn how to recruit them in. In programs like nursing, we have a waiting list and are nearly maxed out on all of our campuses, but it's usually clinical spots and some masters in nursing to teach. These are challenges we have to figure out, and we will. It will also, this tool will also demonstrate in some cases where we don't need to be offering programs on all campuses, and we will use that to right size as well. My commitment is that Ivy Tech will be able to report that we are industry aligned within the next 2 years, and we're not waiting. In fact, in March, we will be having our workforce alignment team working with our provost and academic teams in each region using that demand data for their programs measured against current enrollment. This will create that delta, that plus or minus that we need to work with our deans, our program chairs, and workforce consultants, all developing plans to right-size their programs. And you're going to see us look different in marketing. You're used to seeing that Ivy Tech logo around places. You probably won't see that logo unless it has some job next to it. These are the ones we need to be recruiting into. And if you want to help us, some of you in industry, you could help us co-brand and help market with us to make sure that the word is out where these high-demand jobs are. And we have to learn how to communicate these middle-skill jobs, not just to 18-year-olds, but to incumbent workers as well. And we've emerged a best practice that I invite each of you here today to consider as you leave. It's called Achieve Your Degree. Old National Bank began this program in Evansville with their campus there because they wanted to fill their middle skill jobs and they wanted to raise up their entry-level people into those jobs. You see other great companies like Cook Group in there as well. The program helps entry-level employees move up into the programs that their company has a demand for. Our admissions people and advisors go on site, concierge style, and enroll employees in the programs. And we do financial aid while we're there. Guess what? About 25% of entry-level workers often qualify, which saves those dollars for the company in tuition reimbursement. Students persist at over 80%. Employers have a talent pipeline. It's a real win-win. We have 700 in the program today. 5,000 is our goal this fall. And Ivy Tech is transforming into that 12-cylinder workforce engine that Indiana needs. So I'm going to end with two things, one challenge and one opportunity. The challenge, our own physical plant is of concern. Over those 32 campuses, we have 6.6 million square feet and nearly 200 million in deferred maintenance. My goal is to reduce our footprint. We've already shed over 300,000 square feet since the summer. And one of our buildings was the Inventrec building in Kokomo. Anybody remember what happened in Kokomo in August? It was called a tornado. We had skylights in our classrooms. So we had to move those students, those health science students, into the already challenged Kokomo campus over the weekend to meet the needs. Any expansions that we will do will only be if the demand requires it. So let me be clear, the goal here is not to close any campuses, but to ensure that we have just the facilities we need on each campus to deliver the programs our students and employers need. And that is what our capital requests reflect. Four of the five projects are old buildings in deep need of improvements to provide that effective and safe learning environment to our students. Just this week, interestingly, you know, these things just truly, they have to be real because they just don't happen. Harshman Hall in Fort Wayne, which has classrooms and student services, our number four on that list, had to be shut down because it has no water and can't use the restrooms. So all the students had to be moved out, and now there's still student services happening in there, and those people are still in their offices. So we're still investigating how do we fix it, but that's project number four. So you know that these are tough. So far, we've succeeded in getting Kokomo in the state budget, and we're very thankful for that. And I recognize $130 million that are in these first five projects is a lot of money. However, we can't provide that highest quality educational experience, nor can we expect to attract students to an aged, tired campus. If we're serious about meeting the state's workforce needs, we need to show a commitment to facilities. And I'm hopeful the General Assembly will work with us on that. Now the opportunity. What if we could help thousands of students who start at Ivy Tech or Vincennes, but they transfer before they complete their associate's degrees to a four-year institution, which is about 25,000 students a year? What if we could ensure that when they completed those 60 hours or what their associate degree required while pursuing that four-year degree, what if we could help them along the way actually receive their associate degree? That's called reverse transfer. Why is it important? Well, first, the student has earned it. They've earned all the credits they need for that associate degree. And studies show that students who've received reverse transfer are even 10 to 20% more likely to complete their bachelor's degree once they've received the associate degree. It's like a major milestone. Recognizing that most of our students are part-time, realize they may be at that four-year institution for 4 years to finish their bachelor's degree, and they could use that associate degree to go from an entry level to maybe a manager's job along those years. And maybe the most important reason, some of our students don't make it to 4 years. Life happens. That's how 750,000 Hoosiers have part of a degree but not a full degree. For these Hoosiers, the associate degree is the true lifeline to the middle class. Of the estimated 20,000 plus students who will transfer from Ivy Tech to a four-year institution each year, less than 100 will receive a degree by reverse transfer. The effort has been hindered by several reasons. First, students don't know they can, and their four-year institutions aren't incented to give it to them. In fact, if you're a state institution, the current performance funding would hurt you to do it. You see, as other institutions earn more credits, as one does, earns more, the other institution gets less of that performance funding pie. We're thankful to our four-year institutions who have stepped up, and you see them noted there, and we're working with the Higher Ed Commission to hold our four-year institutions harmless as we look to do this. The final barrier is something called FERPA. If you come from the HIPAA world, you know all about that. That's privacy. And so we have to work with USDOE and our congressional team to make sure we can share information, because our goal is to see that every student who earned an associate degree gets it. This effort, when successful, could net as many as 10,000 more associate degrees per year in Indiana, which, to Jamie, that would move your Lumina goal measurably. So we're working on that. Finally, we understand at Ivy Tech that we are a large part of Indiana's workforce solution. If we don't succeed, and let me be even more clear, if our students don't succeed and we don't align to the needs of Hoosier employers, Indiana's economy will struggle to grow. Hoosier incomes will continue to lag. And worst of all, tens of thousands of Hoosiers will lose their lifeline to that middle class. Be assured, we understand the challenge before us. Though daunting, it is achievable. We are 2 months into an all-inclusive strategic planning session. We're inviting the best minds in the state and nationally to our table. And be assured, we will be reaching out to many of you, our partners, to ensure Ivy Tech transforms into the nation's best community college, focused on helping students succeed and meeting employers' workforce needs. Thank you. I warned David I'm kind of long, so sorry about that.
This is taking me a while to get up here.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. That
You're
was
welcome.
Terrific. So you've been in this job now all of what, 8 months?
Yeah, about
seven, 8 months?
Yeah.
What's the biggest surprise you've had so far in this?
You know, I was privileged that the Board of Trustees gave me June to travel around the state and meet people in the campus. And, you know, before I came into Ivy Tech, I had been to a lot of Ivy Tech campuses, had met quite a few people, but I was more at the 10,000 foot. As you came into the campuses, what I learned is our faculty and staff largely see their jobs as a vocation. You will see them do extraordinary things to serve our students. And again, I've been in a higher ed institution and taught in several of them, but there's something special about that. And that was such a good surprise. And I shouldn't say it's a surprise, of course, they would be committed. But it's the thing that makes me enthused that we can do what needs to be done in front of us to meet Indiana's challenge.
So coming from your most recent role with the state, and you mentioned the legislation that was adopted last year, and obviously there's a focus this year again in the General Assembly on workforce programs. What in the chair you're in now, what is the right sort of dynamic between the state and Ivy Tech in dealing with some of these issues?
You know, I think as long as we're all partnering together, that we none of us can afford to be a silo, and I know the Superintendent of Public Instruction would echo that. We have to really, that the Indiana Career Council work was right. It's about creating that pipeline all the way from K-12 so that students know what those demands are. It's then us seamlessly taking those students and then seamlessly sharing them with our four-year partners and with employers at the table all along the way. You can't get into our schools too young. You can't be on Ivy Tech's campus too often. We can't be in your place too often. It really is critical that we get this line. And so I think that's where the legislation, as long as we continue to work with that in mind, that we none of us do it together. It's DWD. It is the Superintendent of Public Instruction with DOE. It is CHE. It's all of us figuring this out together. And I think we're seeing that more and more. And really, at the end of the day, we all have to have the will, both political and otherwise, to make things work, to make relationships happen, even where they're not. The real blessing last year was, because DWD was required to do this, we just went to DWD and said, hey, how can you help us? So we built that visualization tool you saw. We ended up building it together instead of us saying, okay, you gave us the data, now we'll build the tool. We just said, can we just do this together? We need help. And I think we need to do that ever more often.
So I mentioned to you that the Twitter questions we get are often pretty interesting and pretty directly asked.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you one of them.
Sure.
This is pretty cool. How do you manage the narrative, and how do you prepare people for emerging jobs instead of preparing them for dying jobs? The person has not defined what that means, but I think it's an interesting question.
Well, and I think IT is such a great example of that. When you look at the workforce demand, we think that the numbers that it shows are about a zero off. You know that there's not tens of these, there's hundreds of these, and whether it says hundreds, there's really thousands of them. So I think that's where being in touch with you all, employers, and the work CICP is doing with groups like TechPoint and BioCrossroads and AgriNovus, we need to be at the table to see what those emerging jobs are going to be. And, you know, we have to be nimble. So nimble and agile are two words that I use a lot at Ivy Tech. That's not easy in higher education. Those are typically oxymorons to say those two, you know, higher ed and nimble at the same time. So, but we have to figure out how to do that. And in fact, I said, you know, we're a big ship, we got to turn it. And then somebody said, no, you really need 32 speedboats. And that, you know, that's really what we need to do. So, yeah, good challenges.
So, and does Ivy Tech have a sort of a research component, sort of looking at where work is going?
Those VPs of workforce would really be the ones that we want engaged, each of them at the tip of their sector to be working with employers, to be working with your organizations, and to be working across the state on our behalf, and then taking that along with their insights to deans and chairs. And our deans and chairs, I should say up front, they're in many of our areas, we have hundreds of advisory boards across the state. In fact, that was a funny thing that that bill required DWD to be in each of our advisory boards, and then they got the list of 300 of them to try to staff. So we have a lot of those relationships. We are doing well in some of them, not mm-hmm. so well in others, and I think it's a challenge of all of ours to get out in front. We can, with CHE has been very good, Higher Ed Commission has been very good about saying they will accelerate the approval of our new programs. And to date, in fact, this past year, they approved one of our programs before my own State Board of Trustees got to approve it. So that's how fast they can be. We can work much more nimbly, and we don't have to be ahead of it, but we have to be very close to where the industry is so that we can fill those.
Does part of that involve direct conversations with industry?
And absolutely. Industry in every chance. Chris Lowry always uses the example, until you have a restraining order against you, you're not too close to your customers, right? And so I think we have to be that bold. And I say, and I'll make this invitation to all those here, if we could have you as employers in our classrooms day one when a student arrives, that would be a wonderful thing, because they'd get to see early what you need, why it's so important that they become successful, mm-hmm. and what you expect of them when they complete. So honestly, there's really never too much working together. And again, I say we're doing pretty well, but we can do much, much better. And you all should expect that out of us.
So someone here is wondering, with regard to emerging ideas, in some states at least, are talking about going back to more of an apprenticeship model for training and having apprenticeship mm-hmm. programs as a part of the curriculum. Would Ivy Tech be interested in that or open to that?
Well, we already do 5,800 apprentices a year at Ivy Tech, mostly in the skilled trades. I see Doug Brown over there who helps us with that work. So we're absolutely all in on that. And we are looking at additional models. We've had invitations to, and we're looking at putting a trip together to go to Germany to do some new things, and Sweden. There's different models out there. We're very interested. Work and learn in general. There's not a single right answer, but let me say one thing about the apprentices. They're like the best programs we've ever had, right? Because you're working while you're getting a skill, and our apprentices all finish with a two-year degree, that associate degree. It takes them 5 years to complete their associate, so they're a failure in all of our data because it took them 5 years. Mm-hmm. But they're obviously the strongest programs out there, proven for many years, and when you can build that work experience into someone's learning. I'm a recovering co-op student from Purdue many years ago. That's a great way to learn. So we would do much more and look at new models of apprenticeship.
We have a number of other questions, but I can only ask you one more because we're close to our time here. And this is another Twitter question. It references, you're talking about dealing with the facilities and making some changes there. Ask a broader question, what is the role, if any, long-term, of brick-and-mortar schools to the future of Ivy Tech in an increasingly virtual world?
It is it's a good question. I think there'll always be a role because there's more than... We know online education fits on some programs for some students. WGU even knows they don't bring students right into online. They want them to have other traditional experience first. And we have large lab components. If you think about our workforce-directed programs, being a CNC operator, you ought to use one now. You can simulate a lot of it in the health professions. There's a lot of things you want them to learn there on site first before they hit the hospital. But I think there'll be a role for both, and we do a lot of that hybrid and online work already. But to date, there's still a large role. We will, in the right sizing, though, I look at every square foot in those buildings and say, if we're not using that room six times a day, it's not fully utilized. You know, one time doesn't count. We have a lot of work on that. So I think it is fair to say that that 6.6 million square feet is a high water mark of where we'll be in square footage. Mm-hmm. It will continue to reduce just to what we need, and where an employer can provide that place for that laboratory experience, that learning experience, hands-on that they need. If we don't need to have it, we won't have it. And we'll partner with our career centers in K-12 where we can do that, and our four-year partners, because all of that, we need to make sure all the investment that the state is making in Ivy Tech, which I didn't share, it's $250 million a year. It's a lot. That it's going to the student getting the skills and training and credentials they need.
Well, thank you very much. Please join me. Terrific presentation, and we look forward to getting updates from the field as you move into this. Dr. Elsman was double mic'd, and the reason for that is because her comments have been recorded, and today's presentation will be broadcast on WFYI Public Radio 90.1 FM on Saturday, March 11th. It will also be available for download at WFYI.org. Please join us next month on Tuesday, March 28th, as we welcome keynote speaker Al Roth, who's a Nobel Prize winner in economics. You're going to hear from an expert that has used math tools and game theory to transform lives. That should be interesting. Put those STEM skills to work, I guess, from creating networks for kidney donation matching to developing systems that allow urban schools to optimally match students, among hundreds of others. This, Dr. Roth has the expert insight on how theory can be used to make real-world changes. Sounds like a pretty opportune time for a talk like that. So please purchase your tickets today, and we look forward to seeing you next month. Thanks again for coming today, and thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a speech from Ivy Tech President Sue Elsperman, part of the 2016-2017 Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series. Join us next month at this time for a speech from Dr. Alvin Roth, Stanford University and Nobel Prize in Economics. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of WFYI Public Media in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.